On this week's episode of the NHL at the Rink podcast, we got Mike Zeisberger talking Leafs, Senators, and Rangers. Sean and I talk Winter Classic and World Juniors. We got some breaking news and some New Year's resolutions. All of that and more coming up on the NHL at the Rink podcast.
NHL at the Rink is presented by Skip, the official food delivery app of the NHL.
Welcome into another episode of the NHL at the Rink podcast. It's brought to you by Skip. Skip to the good part and get groceries, meals, and essentials delivered right to your door on Skip. Sean, it is Thursday. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas. I hope everything was good on your holiday. I heard you had some filet, a little asparagus on the grill. Everything good?
Yeah, it was great. It was a little cold to be grilling, but that's always fun. I could have gone to Skip and skipped the dishes, but I didn't. I put in the effort myself. Next time, I'll skip to the good stuff.
To the good part.
To the good stuff and the good part.
To the good part.
How was your holiday?
It was great, as usual. You know what? I mean, Hanukkah falls right on Christmas this time, so that's not usual. But as usual on Christmas Day, family went up. We saw a movie. Went to see Sonic 3. The younger one, Zach, my 10-year-old, wanted to see it, so we all went. Typically, we order some Chinese food as well. We didn't do that, but it was a nice holiday, a family day. And now it's Thursday, and we've still got one more day until the NHL schedule starts. The World Juniors start today. And, Sean, I did some homework, so we're going to touch on some World Junior stuff. And we got Mike Zeisberger, our colleague based in Toronto, talking Leafs and a little bit on Rangers. That's coming up as well. But, of course, Sean, we have to start with the Winter Classic. The Winter Classic, you and I both leave on Sunday to go to Chicago. I haven't been to Chicago in a while, so I'm very much looking forward to that. And it's New Year's Eve. I think it's 4 o'clock local time in Chicago at Wrigley Field. Blues, Blackhawks, Bedard on center stage. I've been watching the Road to the Winter Classic. That's been real good stuff on Max. The game is on Max, TNT, True TV, Sportsnet, TVA. I'm pumped. We talked about it last week, but this is my favorite event of the year in the regular season. And to go back to Wrigley Field and this time to have Connor Bedard, Sean, I think this is going to be a really good show, despite the fact that neither one of these teams is in a playoff spot.
I think that almost makes it better, right? In that they're at least one of them is fighting to be in a playoff spot. I don't know if it's Chicago's time yet, but they've shown a lot under their new coach. But St. Louis thinks they're a playoff team, and they need to start putting together wins, and they need to be desperate. And I think desperate hockey, you know, certainly translates better. I think the show, we were both at the game at Wrigley back in the day. We were both younger. I think the show's going to be better. I think the NHL has learned so much. Like, if you remember back to that game, you covered the first one in Buffalo, and then we went to that game, and we still didn't know what we were doing. And that's not a slam on anybody. It was only the second time we had ever built ice outdoors. I believe it was the debut of the ice truck, and that's omnipresent now. But there was still so much to learn. And now it's all been learned, and now we're not building, like, it's like Legos, right? When you start with Legos, you build, like, these really simple things. And you're like, wow, look what I built. And then all of a sudden, like, it all clicks in your head. And you're, like, the super engineer. And you're building, like, whole cities and everything else. Like, that's what the Winter Classic's been like. We went from just this basic outdoor rink like we had in Buffalo to these extravagant things. And I think you saw it at Fenway, right, with the difference in the two games there. So I'm really looking forward to Chicago. Like you, I haven't been there in forever. I wish our trip was a little bit longer. There's a lot of things on my list I would like to do. But on top of that list is the hockey game, and it looks like the weather gods are going to take care of us. I just snuck a little peek. Rainy all week, some precipitation on the day of the game, but the temperature's going to be right around 32. So hopefully it's snow. It's on the right side of 32, and we get a little bit of snow, and it's magic.
Well, that's I looked. I did. I looked yesterday. to see what it is. And you're 100% right. It looks like it's going to be perfect weather the entire time we're there. The practice day, obviously, on December 30th, so that's Monday, and the game on Tuesday, the 31st. I love the fact that it's a New Year's Eve game. I actually hope this now becomes more of a tradition to have the Winter Classic on New Year's Eve. I think it's a great way. We talked about it with Darren Pang when he was on. You know, I think it's just a great way to go into your New Year's. You celebrate with hockey, and then you go into your New Year's. So that'll be a lot of fun. I am really looking forward to seeing the future on the big stage, and that's Connor Bedard. I did a Q&A with Paul Bissonnette from TNT. TNT has the game, and Biz was talking about this too. My hope is that, and I don't care who wins the game. That doesn't matter to me, but I want to see Bedard play well. I want to see Bedard score, and wouldn't it be great, and Biz talked about this in the Q&A that's up on NHL.com now, how great would it be for the Blackhawks, for Bedard, for the NHL, that Bedard goes out and scores two or three goals, and he gets interviewed on TNT after the game, and it's a moment, right? I mean, that's a moment. And really, when you think about it, this is supposed to be a generational player, a generational career, right? That's one of those moments that could happen for him in the Winter Classic, like Sidney Crosby scoring the shootout winner in Buffalo in the blizzard, right? That's a moment that will forever be talked about when Sidney Crosby's career is talked about. Bedard has that opportunity now. That's what I'm looking forward to. I want to see that moment. If it happens, if it doesn't happen, the atmosphere, the game, everything's still going to be great. But if that moment happens for Connor Bedard, that's going to make this Winter Classic stand out more than other Winter Classics.
I don't know. I mean, I think there's moments everywhere, right? Like, Ryan Donato's going to play in this game, knock on wood. He's had four chances to play in the Winter Classic. None of them have panned out.
It's no offense, but we're talking about Connor Bedard versus Ryan Donato. I mean, it's a great moment for Ryan Donato, but this is a moment for the National Hockey League, if Bedard, because he's the guy. He's what everybody's talking about.
But there's going to be moments that are going to be talked about regardless. Something's going to happen in that game. Something always happens. Whether it's the Pavel Datsyuk wind-aided goal, whether it's a monster hit in freezing conditions, whether it's a crazy last-second goal like the first game in Fenway, scored by, I believe, Marco Sturm.
Yep.
No Connor Bedard there.
There's moments.
There's moments. There's moments in outdoor games, and that's what outdoor games are about. Look, I hope Connor Bedard scores five goals, but it's not necessary.
Necessary, no, but I think it's I think that makes it special. We talk about Buffalo. We talk about the blizzard, the snow globe, the first, all of those things, and then to cap it off, it was Sidney Crosby on the shootout winner, right? It wasn't Colby Armstrong. No offense to Colby Armstrong, right? It was Sidney Crosby.
It would have been just as cool.
It would have been just as cool, but it became a bigger moment because of who it was. So anyway, look, I agree with you. There's great. I mean, Alex Vlasic is a Chicago guy. He's getting a chance to play at Wrigley Field. Andrew Sorensen, the coach, was at the Winter Classic at Wrigley Field with his wife in the stands as a fan. Now he's coaching in the game. Jim Montgomery and Claude Julien are going to be on the bench for the Blues. They've both coached in games at Fenway Park, at Winter Classics at Fenway Park. Now they get to do it at Wrigley Field. Like, that's really cool. There's going to be a lot of different moments, but it is a part of this is a Bedard show. So let's see. I want to see how the kid plays.
So, Dan, you just pretty much cliff-noted Tracy's whole coverage for the last 2 weeks. So if you're not going to do it, I'm going to do it. Tracy Myers is in Chicago. She's covering the Winter Classic for us. She is absolutely kicking butt and taking names. And I'm going to give her credit right here instead of you stealing all her material.
I didn't steal anything. I just didn't name her.
Yeah.
I left it open for you.
Yeah, okay.
It was a setup, and you took the pass, and you stuffed it right in the net.
So please. One time. Please follow Tracy Myers, who's absolutely coming up with all these great stories. She did an unbelievable oral history of the first Winter Classic at Wrigley Field, which was absolutely unbelievable. Like I said, complete chaos. Nobody knew what was going on, what was going to happen. There was issues with the ice the night before the game. The ice crew, you know, with Dan Craig, who's now retired, you know, pulled off a miracle for that game to be played. There's so many little pieces in that oral history, some that I didn't even know about until I read about it this week. Like I said, please go follow Tracy Myers. She's on site. She's there today. Logos and lines go in today. The field starts to take shape and look like a hockey rink. She's all over it until we get there. And then Dan, of course, will step all over her and do his thing.
Wow. 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 I can't wait till we get to the New Year's resolution part of this podcast. I hope you're nicer to me next year. Man. Wow. All right. Listen. So we have the Winter Classic. Tracy's doing a phenomenal job. But right after the Winter Classic, Sean, USA and Canada in the World Juniors. NHL Network has it in the US. TSN has it in Canada. It starts today, Thursday, December 26th, Boxing Day. And Mike Morial and Adam Kimmelman are kicking butt in that coverage. NHL Draft Class podcast. Go to that. Hey, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this one. All right. And of course, before we started this, because Sean likes to give me all kinds of grief about how I know nothing about junior hockey and I know nothing about these guys, I brushed up. I brushed up because I read all of their coverage. And Sean, is the U.S. going to repeat for the first time in world junior history? Is it going to be back-to-back gold medals for the United States? What do you think?
I do. I think they have a ton of talent. I think they have Trey Augustine, who's the most experienced goalie, part of that Detroit Red Wings goalie pipeline that goes like six deep now. Like, I think if Detroit's going to make a move, that's where it's going to be with one of their prospects in goal or one of their current guys now. But because of Trey Augustine and the experience that he's had in the World Championships, to me, and some of the other guys they have on that team, there's a lot of experience on that team. I think they're the most talented team, and they have, certainly they have that belief in what they can do on that stage, and I think that's really important. And I think if it does happen, and it's only happened a couple of times, it will be awesome to see the Star-Spangled Banner sung in Canada.
In Canada, yeah. They have a ton of talent. Six first-round picks on the team. Now, Canada's got 10 first-round picks on its team. But the Canadians finished fifth last year. They returned five guys from that team. But you look at the U.S. roster, it's like Boston College. I mean, I think there's five players on this U.S. roster from Boston College, led by John Leonard and Gabe Perreault, I mean, who may very well be the two best forwards on the team, right? So it is a loaded roster. It's the we've talked about this over and over and over again, right? The growth of USA Hockey, this, then the other, the U.S. National Team Development Program. But this constant push for this constant expectation of gold, which has come up. What would you say? How long has it been for an expectation of gold, Sean?
For the last eight to 10 years.
Probably. 8 to 10 years, yeah. But there's a major push for it now every year. I mean, John Van Beesbrouck, the GM of the U.S. team, did an interview with Mike Morial. And that's it. I mean, the fast, aggressive, tenacious team. The coach returns, David Carl, right? It's an expectation now for the U.S. to win gold, and now to do it back-to-back. And you and I are Americans, so we can have a rooting interest in this. We should be able to have a rooting interest in this. I don't necessarily care who wins the Stanley Cup. I root for great storylines and good travel. But, and at times, you know, no double overtime, although that could be really exciting as well. But this U.S. roster is experienced. It's loaded. They're coming off a gold medal. There's belief. There's expectation. And they're in Canada. And how fun would that be?
And you know what's funny about it? I was thinking about it the other day. Like, it's four nations themed in the fact that Canada's really talented. Like you just mentioned it, 10 first-round picks. I'm not sure about their goaltending.
No, exactly.
And what's the problem with Canada and the Four Nations? They're the most talented team. they easily have the thinnest goaltending in the tournament. If you were to rank the four teams just by goalies, they're fourth. Distant fourth. It's a problem.
It's obviously a bigger discussion, maybe probably one we should have at some point. But I remember talking recently with Marty Brodeur about this and Canada's goaltending. This is before the Four Nations roster was named. And I did a story on it, too. You have Binnington, Stanley Cup winner. You have Aiden Hill, Stanley Cup winner, right? But you don't have the best, right? It used to be that Canada had not only the best, they had the second best, they had the third best, they had the fourth best, right? Goalie in the National Hockey League to choose from. And now maybe you're talking middle tier, you know, with no offense to these guys, but you're maybe talking middle tier. Why? What is happening? And it's a bigger conversation to have, I know, but now you're seeing it at the World Juniors now too, and probably the last few years. Like, what is happening in Canada with developing goaltenders? What used to happen that is not happening now? Can't argue with their development of skaters, their forwards, defensemen. I mean, it's loaded, right? Every year, but why not goaltending? Do guys not want to play the position? Are you not getting the best athletes to play the position? It's a bigger conversation to have, I know. But it is a conversation, I think, Sean. And you brought it up. Four Nations is an example. World Juniors is an example. Olympics in 2026 is going to be an example.
Yeah, and we should have our good friend Kevin Woodley on. He'll have all the answers. He does our own mass column. Other countries have faced this issue. Finland faced it. They had a symposium about it. All of a sudden, great Finnish goalies, one after another. You know, the Russians had this problem.
Not anymore.
Now think about it. If they were if they're in an international tournament, they might have the three best goalies.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think some of it's cyclical, and I think some of it is investment. Right, and maybe at a grassroots level, there needs to be a re-emphasis of goaltending. But I think overall, the World Juniors is going to be great. You know, it always is. It's great theater. Like, that's what we talk about when you talk about these tournaments or anything. Like, why would you watch if you're not interested, right? It's not your club team. The reason why I watch is because the theater is unrivaled. Like, it's the same reason I can sit down and I can watch a soccer game between two teams that I don't know. But if I know there's passion there, right? Like, if Fenerbahce is playing Galatasaray in the Turkish league, I'm going to sit down and watch it. Because
what?
They hate each other. That's right. What? You heard what I said. And it's the same thing at World Juniors. Like, these kids have grown up hating each other. And wanting to beat each other from the time they were little. So it's all drama. And there's always going to be a dark horse that's going to come through and upset the apple cart.
I think you're the dark horse with those names that just came through. You knocked me right off my game with those names.
You know what that makes me, Dan? NBYUK. You know what that is?
No.
Turkish for the best.
All right. Sure. I won't say it. You believe it. You know who's the best? You know who's NBYUK? Perfect setup, by the way, there, Sean. Mike Zeisberger, our colleague based in Toronto, and he joined us. We talked to him about the Maple Leafs, of course, and he has some opinions on the New York Rangers as well. So let's get...
And the Ottawa Senators.
And the Ottawa Senators as well. Leafs, Sens, Rangers, Mike Zeisberger, brought to you by Skip. Skip to the good part. Get groceries, meals, and essentials delivered right to your door on Skip. Here's Zeis. Zeis, happy holidays. Merry Christmas. How is everything? How you feeling? Looking good? Feeling good?
Well, I just wanted to say happy holidays and Merry Christmas to both of you. Both big helps in my recovery. As you know, last Christmas I was in ICU with some heart and kidney issues, and I gotta say, it was if you could have a something be a thousand times better than it was, yesterday was. So I never thought I'd say this, but it is wonderful to see both of your ravishing faces right now.
This is the best looking panel we've ever had on the podcast here.
Oh man, well,
Where do we
listen,
go from here, Dan?
I don't know. Let's go to the Leafs because that's where we got to go. We got you on. You got to talk Toronto, right? I mean, hey, Zeiss, this team's pretty good. And it's not that it's just pretty good. Sean said it a few weeks back. I don't like to give Sean a lot of credit, but he did say it a few weeks back. The Leafs are playing a playoff style hockey, which we really have not seen. So what's different? What are you seeing?
Well, what's different is just the philosophy and the whole, I don't know, raison d'etre of this team is North and South hockey. Every now and then, Coach Craig Berube, and that is the biggest difference of all, he will give them the ability to freelance a little bit. But for the most part, it's up and down. It's no longer all about puck possession. It's when in doubt, get it out of your own end. No screwing around there. Put pucks in deep. My God, I'm a walking cliche, but that's the way they're playing right now. They're hard on the forecheck. But I think the biggest thing, guys, is that the players are buying what Craig Berube is selling. And we saw this. Look at it was a recipe that helped the St. Louis Blues win the Stanley Cup in 2019. Now you could argue that, I mean, is this Leafs team more talented than that St. Louis team in terms of raw talent? I don't know if they're as good on the back end. I think they have higher end forwards at the in their first and second line, but they have put away the I for the we. And they're playing a big time team game. Now, there's a couple of things here that you have to proceed with caution. Number one, their goaltenders, Wahl and Stolarz. Between them, they have never played more, either one of them, more than 27 games in a season. We've already seen Wahl at the beginning of the season was hurt. Now Stolarz is hurt. And as great as the Matt Murray story is, I'm not sure how much meat there is on that bone. So you got to wonder if these guys are going to be, durable enough to give them the goaltending, because when they're healthy, they've been great. And the other thing is, Austin Matthews hasn't been right since you guys remember that he had that injury that kept him out of the first round last year. He's out again now. He was out for I think 7 or 8 games last month. Now they've done well. They have a better than 500 record without him in the lineup, but I think to your guys' point, in the playoffs, I mean, you're going to need a healthy Austin Matthews. So it's not all peaches and cream, lollipops, everything great, Christmas cheer in Toronto, but there are a lot of things to like, and to Sean's point, especially when it comes to April, May, and June hockey.
So, Zyza, I'm hoping you can explain something to me. You just went through the whole Berube thing, the North South, get it out. There's a team in New Jersey that's playing that style of hockey even better. I think they're 8 games in a row now with less than 20 shots. Their coach used to coach the Toronto Maple Leafs. Why now?
I wish I had the answer for you, Sean. I mean, other than, the only thing I can think of is that how well does the message come through? And in terms of in Toronto, I think while some of the players may have thought that, oh, a coaching change may be coming, I don't think any of them disliked Sheldon Keefe, but I still think there was a tendency for them, And let's not forget that that was Sheldon Keefe's first NHL coaching job. And I think I've always maintained in a place like Toronto, it is very difficult to be a first-time coach or general manager because everything is scrutinized. But I think the players still had, you know what? Yeah, he's preaching this, but you know, we know we're good. We're going to improvise. I think of all the playoff losses, and look, there's been some bad ones in COVID, losing to Montreal, blowing a 3-1 lead. You know, the year that they lost that intro series to Columbus. I think that was, you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, 3 out of 5, or was it 2 out of 3? Either
It was three out
one.
of five. Three out of
Yeah,
five,
the
yeah.
losing to Columbus was just that was unacceptable. But I think last year, when they looked at their team going up against the Boston Bruins, that version of the Bruins, no Krejci, no Bergeron, you looked at it on paper, and we know what paper is worth, but it was like, I think they re that was the year where they really thought, you know what, we should beat these guys, and they didn't. And I think that was very sobering. There's only so many times, you know, I always bring up, and a lot of the viewers and listeners won't remember this, but those that are old enough that do, Charlie Brown, where he's trying to kick a field goal, and every time Lucy pulls the ball away, and he lands on his rump. And then the next time she says, "Oh, okay, don't worry, I won't take the ball away." And she does. And it just keeps over and over again. And that's what the Leafs have been like. Like, okay, this is going to be the year that we're going to overcome. You know we disappointed in the playoffs last year, and then they do the same thing. I really think that Berube is just such a different voice, a different style, and he walks into the room with that Stanley Cup ring. I think some of these guys are at the point now that, you know what? They look, you know, their core four, the Nylanders, the Marners, the Matthews, they're in their mid-20s, okay? They're nowhere near the clock running out, but it's no longer, oh, wait till they get in their prime. They are in their prime. So they got to figure it out. And I just think that that has been one of the reasons, because they look back and said, look, maybe what everybody has been saying all these years is true. The way we're doing it isn't working. Whereas, you know, you guys are closer to the situation in New Jersey, but I've always thought that Sheldon was a good coach. He's starting from scratch with that young, which is a young team. And let's face it, in my estimation, he never had a defense in Toronto like he has in New Jersey. And I think that's a big difference.
And that's the why. To me, that's the why. You know, to Sean's question, why now? Because of Riley, who's been terrific, Jake McCabe, and then the additions of Tanev and a reinvented Oliver Ekman-Larsson from his time in Florida. Those four guys are the big are among the biggest reasons why the Maple Leafs are playing this North-South game, because that's how they play. That's the game that they play. Now, Morgan Rielly's can freelance it a little bit, but you watch him. He is a North-South defenseman with offensive ability. And you said it, Zeiss, Keefe never had a defense like this. So they're also, and what they're doing is they're insulating the goaltenders too. They're doing a good job of insulating the goaltenders as well. And that helps Stolarz, that helps Wohl. And I think that to me is, I mean, you look at this team right now, they're scoring above three goals per game, which is what you need and what you expect, but they're allowing less. And you do that in the National Hockey League, you're going to be a good time. You're going to be a good and consistent team. And I mean, to me's eyes, and you see it more than we do, those top four, that top four is the best top four I've seen in Toronto in quite a while.
And the other thing too, Dan, is a guy like McCabe, who's kind of been the unheralded, I don't want to say hero, but one of the guys that has really stepped up. But you could see even last year, he was doing things that weren't comfortable. It was all about, you know, the stressing of moving the puck and being creative. That's not who he is, okay? That's not, and then you bring in a guy like Chris Tanev. That's not who Chris Tanev is. And under Berube, and you brought this up, like the high scoring areas where they've taken chances away from the opposition, the analytics show such a huge difference. because they're not worried about, again, puck possession or stuff. They're worried about getting the puck out of their own end cleanly. And now you look at a Jake McCabe from last year as opposed to this year, and it's almost like there's two different players. And again, it goes to the buy-in of Craig Berube and the fact that, and I agree with you, I don't know what happened to Oliver Ekman Larson in Vancouver, but I mean, thankfully for Toronto, and I'm sure Florida says this last year, thankfully he left that version on the left coast of BC.
I want to switch gears a little, Zize, and go across Ontario to the Ottawa Senators. What's the real Ottawa Senators? The team that went into Christmas break with 7 of 8, or the team that scuffled for the first month and a half of the season?
You know what, Sean? I mean, again, I don't want to be fooled or sucked into thinking, oh, this is a different Ottawa Senators team. But from what I've seen from them, it is. And it Travis Green, obviously, there were some growing pains. This is a skilled team, but it didn't really learn how to play defense. But they came into Toronto in November when the Leafs, I'm trying to think, the Leafs, I think, won 5 of 6 at that time. And the only loss was a shutout on home ice against the visiting Ottawa Senators. They shut out Toronto. They were so good in every aspect. Defensively, they didn't give up anything. You know, on the rush, they have such skilled players, and you're going like, I remember seeing Michael Andlauer, the owner of the Senators, after that game and saying, you know what, if your team plays like that, you can beat anybody in this league. Again, part of it is buy-in, and look, a big part of it is Ullmark. I mean, we saw he struggled early on, but he's been, you know, I would argue he's been as hot a goalie as anybody in this league. And when you look at the Senators last year, I believe they either had the worst or second worst save percentage in the entire National Hockey League. And that is a big deal, as we know. I mean, you don't have to delve deep into analytics to figure that out. But I'm buying the Ottawa Senators. I like what they're doing. And look, guys, we've said on this show before, how long in the Atlantic Division has there been this mushy middle between the Buffalo Sabres, Ottawa Senators, Detroit Red Wings, and those three teams? And we always talk about, when are they going to be able to crack, you know, the two Florida teams, Toronto and Boston? Every year, those are the four teams that go through. The dumpster fire in Buffalo, I just shake my head every year. I feel bad for the fans there. I don't understand Detroit. I think they should be far better for the talent that they have. But to me, the Senators are starting to show signs of pulling out of that mushy middle and kind of contending with some of those for some of those top four Atlantic Division teams. So yeah, Sean, I am buying the Ottawa Senators, and especially if Linus Ullmark continues to play the way he has.
Sean gave me grief last week for using the word mushy middle like 3 or 4 different
times. Is that
times.
Why he was grinning like a
yes,
Chester
that
cat?
Is why
okay.
He's grinning right now.
You know, I was going like, oh, he must really like the point that I'm making. Look at the smile on his face. I should have known better.
We need our producer, Phil, to have some sort of noise every time somebody says mushy middle.
Well, I'll
Sean,
tell you
like
what,
on the
though.
Price is Right, one of the wah.
Yes. I'll tell you what, I'm believing the Ottawa Senators too. But part of the reason I'm believing the Ottawa Senators is because I don't believe in any of the teams behind them,
yeah,
right? I mean, that's a big reason. They've defended well. They've kept the puck out. You touched it on it, Ullmark, the way they're playing, all of that stuff. Do you look at some of the teams behind them? Okay, Pittsburgh's there, and they played a little bit better, but they allow so much, and I don't think they can be trusted. Philly, Columbus, I'm not sure. They're not quite there yet. And then you get to, well, I mean, you got to even go, yeah, no, then you get to the New York Rangers. And Zize, we're closer to it here, but just geographically where we are. I'm curious from your perspective, not being as geographically close to the New York Rangers, what the more of the national viewpoint is. What are you hearing? What are, you know, what's the conversation, if there is any, on what has happened to the New York Rangers, who just got shut out 5-0 with 12 shots on goal and scratched Chris Kreider? What's your take on this?
Okay, a couple things. First, I know we had a text chain where we were talking about this stuff, and I looked at the coach, and you guys correctly, you know, because you are closer, going like, well, this is a lot on the players, that they're just so moribund, and there's no zeal, there's no push, there's no energy. First of all, and let's get this out of the way, I closely follow the Rangers because I picked them to go to the final last year, and I picked them to go to the final this year. And I've been wrong a lot, but this is like two strikes and you're out, okay? Like, I mean, what's going on with these guys? But let me ask you, both of you guys, really quickly, and then we can expand on this. But I can remember a couple of years ago, before Peter Laviolette was hired, where the Rangers went into a game 7, and I was covering Tampa, Toronto, and that Rangers-Devils series was the one that I wanted to watch more than any other one. And because they were on the same night as Toronto-Tampa, I didn't really get to see any of it until game 7. And that was one of the biggest duds that I've ever seen in game 7. The Rangers looked like they didn't even come to play. And they've changed coaches. You know, Laviolette has a strong voice and stuff like that. But then when I watched them the last couple of games, Dan, and you guys, like I said, you guys have seen them more, I see that same moribund product that I saw at that time. It's head scratching to me with that goalie. When you have a guy like that, it's head scratching to me how talented this team is and yet continues to do that. And it's head scratching to me, you know, and this is just a little piece of it, but here's an example. When the Rangers came into Toronto early in the season, Lafreniere, and I go back to the series against the Panthers, he looked like a man among boys. He looked like he was going to take the giant step. In fact, I would have told you at the end of October, and I believe I wrote something about it, that, you know, I know Team Canada officials were looking at him. He was almost a sure thing after you get past the big names in that. But, you know, from 8 to 13 in the forwards, he was somebody they had there. And his development seems to have hit a wall. I have no idea if what we see from Kako, maybe he's reached his ceiling. Maybe we're all wrong about it. But what I haven't seen, what I didn't see in New York, is development from those guys. And we can talk about Laviolette. I know I brought up the fact that, you know, and I still believe it, and I know he's got McDavid and Draisaitl out there, but the fact that Chris Knobloch was in their stable, he was coaching their farm team, and they opted to go for a retread like Laviolette. I'm not sure how much that factors into it, but what I do see is under Chris Drury, who seems to be becoming more I'll get this word out soon, enigmatic by the day, and the coaching staff, that, you know, other than your beloved Matt Rempe, I don't see these young guys developing the way that we thought they would. I mean, let's face it, we're not that far removed from the Rangers having the first overall pick and the second overall pick in the NHL draft. And so I think, you know, from the outside looking in, it looks like something that's, you can't just pinpoint one thing, but I think you have to look at the coach and the GM and the players all as one. I don't think this is just one of those three aspects that you can say, oh, if we fix this, the other two will fall into place.
Yeah, I just, like, it's what we talked about with Toronto, right? Like, they move on from Sheldon Keefe and they play a different way. It's mm-hmm. almost like the players understood that it wasn't the coach. that they needed to do something different. And I feel like that's where the Rangers are, right? Like, they need to understand that what they did, what they do, isn't good enough. And you can talk about the young players all you want, but their core guys haven't delivered. I mean, Dan can probably speak to this better than any of us, but their leading lights have been dim.
Yep.
How's that for a Broadway?
Like that. Like that. Listen, he scratched Chris Kreider, and people, you know, questioned it. It became big news. It's warranted. It's warranted. He has not been a good 5-on-5 player. And worse yet, he's not getting to the front of the net on the power play. And for 5 or 6 games leading up to it, the power play hadn't scored. So if Chris Kreider's not getting in the front of the net and he's not delivering anything for you at 5-on-5, why is he playing? Right? I mean, so it's a scratch. It was a warranted scratch. If he were to scratch Mika Zibanejad, it would be warranted. He has not played well. All right? And you can't scratch everybody. You can't bench everybody. You can't
but
do those things.
Let me really quickly interject. So what happened to the guy, you know, I mean, against the Carolina Hurricanes that almost changed that series for them? Why do you suddenly not go in front of the net? I mean,
yeah, I don't know. It's a great question. I'll tell you what, it's a confidence thing. The team has lost all confidence, so that does play a role in it. There is a, like, I don't think it's a lack of try with the New York Rangers. I think it's a misdirection effort, right? I mean, so Chris Kreider sees, maybe Chris Kreider, or better example of Mika Zibanejad. Maybe Mika Zibanejad sees this isn't quite working, so he's getting out of his element to try to do something, and it's killing them. Or defensively, Adam Fox is getting out of his element, and now you get burnt by it, right? So I think there's a lot of that. I think there's just the need for these guys to get over what has happened to them this season, to move on from it. Jacob Trouba is gone. You don't like how it happened? Don't care anymore. Barclay Goodrow is gone. You don't like how it happened? So what, right? I mean, you got to get over it. You got to be professional about the whole thing. It's just the other thing about it is, and it showed up in the series against Florida last year, and at times it showed up in the series against Carolina. Their speed. They're not a quick team. They're not a fast team. They are prone to getting stuck in their own end. It was evident early this season. And I understand why they tried to run it back, because they went to the conference final last year, right? I get it. It showed up earlier this season, and the goaltending was so good that it masked it. They won a game 4-0 in Detroit. Jonathan Quick was in net. I mean, he was Superman in that game, and they win 4-0. So it looks great on paper, but man, it wasn't, right? And now it's broken so much that the goaltending can't even cover it up anymore, even though the goaltending is still pretty good. It can't cover it up anymore. They're not a fast team. They need to retool this, if you will. And they're starting to do that. I think people don't like it, but they're starting to do it. But they're not old, but they've gotten old and slow. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And you know, it's interesting because in Lavi's first game, regular season game, coaching the Rangers, they played in Buffalo last season, and I went to that game. The Rangers had 21 blocked shots in the third period. And you're going like, they're buying in. Here we go. We started this segment about buying in Toronto. And now I watch them. And to your point, Dan, I mean, you know, to what I said earlier, when in doubt, get it out. And you watch them. They're trying to make these fancy plays. They're still trying to find those seam passes from their own zone. And it seems to me they just, when it doesn't work, they just get grinded down. And, you know, I'll say it again. I mean, I'm impressed with the raw talent on this team, but I'm just not sure that that's the way they can play, especially on the back end, especially when you lose a guy like Trouba. Because as much as I love a guy like Adam Fox, he could play on my team any day. But how effective is he going to be when the other team is cycling and grinding on you, right?
Yep.
Size, as always, you've educated us in ways that I couldn't even imagine.
Or wanted to know.
And I hope you have a great new year. I hope it's the best year yet. And looking forward to seeing you. I would think it's going to be at Four Nations, which is coming up faster than any of us can even comprehend. So have a great new year, and we'll catch up soon.
Listen, thank you for having me, guys, and have a great time in Chicago at the Winter Classic. My recommendation when I covered the first one in my previous life for Post Media, I went across the road and hung out with the guys on the rooftops. And you know what? They're a lot of fun. For some reason, I don't remember about the last hour that I was up there. Maybe you guys can find out what happened to me. Okay.
It was the cold. Cold froze your brain.
Okay, we'll go
Absolutely.
with that.
Yep. Zyze, you're the best. Thanks so much.
Thank you, guys.
Great stuff there from Zyze. So happy we can get him on. Again, that interview brought to you by Skip. Skip to the good part and get groceries, meals, and essentials delivered right to your door on Skip. All right, Sean, let's a little potpourri here in the second half of our last podcast of 2024. I got a question in my mailbag this week. Mailbag's up on NHL.com. What team is in the playoffs right now? So in a playoff position, obviously, right now, that will not be at the end of the season? Pick one team. My team that I chose was the Vancouver Canucks. They're in the first wild card right now. They have a 603 points percentage, 41 points in 34 games. But a little bit of turmoil. JT Miller and Elias Pettersson. They allow a lot of goals. 3.12 goals against is the fourth most in the Western Conference. They got a lot of tough games left. I'm not loving the Vancouver Canucks, and I'll explain a little bit more why, but I want to give you the floor, Sean. Do you have a team that's in the playoffs right now, or in a playoff position right now, that won't be by the end of the year?
You know what? I'm going to go out on a limb. And I don't think the Kings are going to be there. I think Vancouver's going to make it. I think what they're going through now is going to make them stronger, and prepare them for the playoffs. I think they're going to figure it out, and they're going to make a push. I'm not really worried about many teams below them, you know, pushing up. There's a lot of teams that are close, right? Calgary, Utah, within three
Yeah, I
points.
like Utah. I like Utah.
I like Utah,
Yeah.
too. I just don't know that they have enough firepower.
I understand.
And I don't know why, but I just look at that Kings team and I don't know how they're doing it. And maybe I'm wrong, but I think that's where I would go if I had to do that. I think maybe the more interesting question is who's not in the playoffs that's going to be in the playoffs.
Well, that's a I think, to be honest with you, I look at the East right now, and we touched on this with Zyze. I think Ottawa's in because I don't believe in any of the teams behind them, to be honest with you. And now I don't know 100% how much do I believe in Ottawa. That there's still a lot to be proven there. And I could eat these words, you know, because there's so much to be proven there with Ottawa. But I'm going to stick with that. I'm going to stick with Ottawa in the playoffs and the other seven in the East right now. Obviously, Florida, Toronto, Boston, New Jersey, Washington, Carolina, and Tampa. I mentioned it. I think Utah jumps up. I like the way they're playing. I love the way they're coached. They have a lot of home games still to play, and they have not been very good at home, but they're still developing a home ice advantage in that building. Young players looking to take the next step. I think their goaltending is pretty solid. Vemelka has been quite good. I think they're going to have to keep him. He's a UFA. I think they should keep him. I like Utah to take that next jump, sort of the way Ottawa has taken that jump. You remember, I mean, when they were Arizona, they were a building team. They were getting better each year. So they've moved to Utah, and you expect them to get better again. And I think that they will, and I can see them too being this bubble team. I could see Bill Armstrong, their general manager, doing a reversal of what he's done in the past, become a buyer because they got a load of cap space. And you become a buyer at the deadline. You fill some defensive holes. You have that you need, like Dursey being out is a hole, right? So you got to fill that. I look at the Utah Hockey Club and I think they can be a playoff team. The reason I said Vancouver, and I'm also got to tell you, I'm not 100% sold on the Kings either. Okay, they defend really well. How long does that goaltending hold up? That's got to be a question, but they do defend really well. But I looked at Vancouver. They still got to play Vegas three times, Winnipeg three times, and Dallas three times. That's nine games against three of the top teams. They got Edmonton, Minnesota, Colorado. They got Toronto, Washington. I wrote about this, so I have all these off, you know, off the top of my head because I wrote about this. But also, coming out of the Four Nations, they have two road trips of five or more games. That's a lot. And five of their last six games, Sean, two against Vegas, one against Dallas, one against Colorado, and one against Minnesota. The schedule is really hard for the Vancouver Canucks. They don't keep the puck out of the net well enough. So I think that they are the team, more than the Kings, because of the defending, I think they're the team that's a little bit more vulnerable, and Utah's the team that I see jumping up in the West.
By the way, and looking at the standings, as we kind of do this reset to go into the new year, the Dallas Stars are the second wild card in the West. That's unbelievable.
I know. They're way better than that. I think they have a big second half. I think that they will. But it's interesting. You know, it's an interesting topic. I liked your other question. But let's flip it to a different. Let's go to the top here. We're at the holiday break. We come off of it tomorrow being Friday. Sean, who's the best team in the National Hockey League?
Right this minute?
This season. Who's the best team in the National Hockey League this season?
Right now, it's the Vegas Golden Knights.
Agree. Well, and it's not, I say that, they have the best points percentage, right? So, sounds pretty obvious to say that.
But it has nothing to do with, it has nothing to do with that. They are built to succeed in the playoffs.
They have the most balanced game. You agree with that?
Yeah, I agree with that. They have the fewest holes. I just think when you look at them and you look at a team that's going to succeed in the playoffs, they have all of those ingredients. So, you know, I think there's contenders to that throne. You know, I've always been big all year on the Florida Panthers. I don't think they're very different from the team that won the Cup last year. You look at what New Jersey's doing right now, the defense they're playing. Like, it's been eight games in a row that they've given up less than 20 shots. The 95 Devils didn't do that. The 2000 Devils didn't do that. Like, they're playing defense at a level that's never been seen. I don't believe that's ever been done before. And everybody knows that defense wins championships, and they can score. So I think some people are sleeping on them. I think the New York Rangers, and we talked about this, slept on them a little bit the day before the holiday break. So
that's a different conversation altogether. But listen, I agree with you with Vegas, number one. I think Vegas is the best team in the league. I think they cover every base. They don't get beat in any area. But you talked about the Devils. And what do we talk about with Florida, with Vegas recently? We've seen it with these Stanley Cup winning teams. Big defense, right? Well, look at the Devils. Dougie Hamilton, Brendan Dillon, Kovacevic, Pesci, Siegenthaler, Hughes. They're all big boys, right? I mean, Hughes is still growing into his body a little bit, but he's got big. He's 6'2", 6'3", right? You know? So the Devils, and I'm glad you brought that up, they're not getting it. I don't think that they will get enough credit for how they defend. And I think part of the reason for that, Sean, is the first quarter of the season, they were giving up some stuff. They were giving up four or five a game at times. And they've seemed to self-correct that with how they defend. Their goaltending is solid. But the size on the back end, it was a huge factor in Florida to win the Stanley Cup last year. A huge factor in Vegas, and a big reason why Vegas is still, you and I agree with this, the best team in the National Hockey League right now. And I think is going to be a huge factor in the New Jersey Devils' success this season, too. Has been already.
So let me ask you the last thing, standings related. Where are the Washington Capitals when this is all said and done?
Well, I like the Capitals, the retool that they did in the in the offseason, which I also, to plug it again, touched on in my mailbag. I think they're top three in the division. Part of the reason I think they're top three in the division is who's better? Who's jumping up? Who's coming up at them and taking them out? They have played really consistently good hockey, and they've survived without their best goal scorer in Alex Ovechkin, who's coming back. They have size. They're maybe not the fastest team, but they move the puck quickly. Their defense is good enough. The goaltending has been spectacular. It's got to hold up, but it's with Logan Thompson and Charlie Lindgren, you'd think it will. One of those guys can take it and run, I would imagine. I think they're a top three team in the Metro. Where they are in the playoffs, that's going to be interesting. So if they play Carolina in the first round or they play New Jersey in the first round, got to see. I mean, we're still talking 48 games away from that, you know. But I think Washington has positioned itself to be a top three team in the Metropolitan Division. I don't think I'm going out on a limb saying that because of how they've played, but also because how Pittsburgh, Columbus, Philadelphia, the Islanders, and the Rangers have played.
Yeah, I don't think you're going out on a limb at all and saying they're top three in the division. I'm concerned about what they'll do towards the end of the season and when we get to the playoffs and when everyone's game changes a little bit and whether they have another gear or not. I think that remains to be seen. And I also think the thing that remains to be seen is when Alex comes back, Alex Ovechkin, and if he's at his peak quickly and he's able to put Wayne Gretzky's goal record in his sights, what that's like.
Yeah.
Right?
Never seen it.
How that impacts them, right? Because the last record he chased, it became all about him, right? The whole team catered to him to get that done. And I think as you go into a playoff run, the last thing you want is that kind of distraction, right? Where in every building you go into, this is the storyline. Wayne Gretzky's showing up. There's a coterie of media following him everywhere he goes. Like, it's something that would be an added thing going into the playoffs that I don't know would be a positive.
Agree 100%, but I think being in a playoff race changes that, right? Being in a team, positioning yourself to be the best you could possibly be going into the playoffs will change the approach from what maybe we've seen in the past from when he was pushing for 800 or something like that. Like, then it was all about him, but this has got to be all about the team. And you're right. We haven't seen it. We don't know, right? But I think that does change it. And it's a veteran team that is pushing for something bigger as a team. They're going to want to set him up. But why wouldn't you want to set him up when he's on the ice with you, right? And I think it comes back like, you know, if you have the ability to pass the puck to the best goal scorer on the planet in history, well, you're going to try to pass him the puck. Whether he's going after a record or not, if he's in position, he's got to be in position, all of that stuff. So I don't know that it changes that much. The attention changes. But at this point, I would think Alex Ovechkin is used to the attention. He knows it. He knows it's coming. He knows how to handle it. He's a veteran. He's in his late 30s. So I don't think it impacts them that much. But we don't know because we haven't seen it.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I hope it happens. I think it'll be a great way to end the year. You know, he was so hot before he got injured, and he's close to coming back. I think it'll be before the new year. We'll see. There's a couple of games before that. I think that's what they're targeting. But if not, it'll be in the new year, and it'll be great to watch going down the second half. I hope he makes a run at it.
I hope so, too. All right, so that can lead us into the last three topics that you got to say something. Say it.
So, Dan, we just gave all of our opinions on what the playoff race is going to look like and how some teams aren't going to make it and other teams are. And then the best laid plans get scuttled by breaking news. And that's what we have here today, breaking news. Not only do we need Phil to have a sound for the mushy middle, we need like the 10-10 wins news chime
for breaking
to announce.
Yes.
To announce.
Announce it. Say it.
That the Detroit Red Wings have just hired Todd McClellan as their coach. Derek Lalonde is out. Todd McClellan's in with Trent Yawney. And for those of us who followed Dan Rosen closely, which is everyone, we all know that Trent Yawney was in the coach's room this year. Dan was writing that. Every time Dan writes a coach's room, that coach gets hired in the NHL. So Trent's just the latest one. Congratulations to him. Congratulations to Dan, his schedule, his achievements continue to pile up. And does this make Detroit different? Clearly, it's a bold move by Steve Yzerman.
First off, I did tell Trent Yawney at the start, guys I do coach's room with, get a job. I didn't expect it to happen this fast, but good for him. He obviously coached with Todd McClellan in L.A. There is a relationship there, so this makes a lot of sense. Todd McClellan, to me, makes a lot of sense. A coaching change in Detroit makes a lot of sense. I think Derek Lalonde can be a good coach in the National Hockey League. I don't know that he was handed the best fit for a team. Also, first job, you never know, all these things. I think he'll probably get another one. When that happens, I don't know, but I would imagine he gets another one. But for right now, the Detroit Red Wings need a new direction. They need a change. Todd McClellan's a veteran coach. Derek Lalonde was not. Derek Lalonde is a veteran in coaching world, but it was his first NHL head coaching job. Todd McClellan has had a few of them, right? He's also grew up a little bit in the Red Wings organization. He won the Stanley Cup with the Red Wings in 2008, coaching under Mike Babcock. And they need a new change. Does it change, Sean? Does it change the standings too much? I mean, I don't think so. I think the Red Wings could get the new coach bump. They haven't played well. I don't know about their goaltending. I don't know about their depth, their speed. They're right now 8 points back from the Ottawa Senators for the second wild card, but you've got every other team except the Buffalo Sabres to in between them that's not in a playoff spot. It's a long jump for them to climb that high into the playoff spot, but I think it makes them more noticeable, if you will. I think Todd McClellan is a very good coach. I think he's been a good coach pretty much wherever he's gone, right? And it's an interesting move, but it's not surprising, and it's not a surprising name either, because there is a history he's associated with in the past, the Detroit Red Wings.
You know what it reminds me of? The Craig Berube, Sheldon Keefe conversation we just had.
Yeah, possibly.
Right, Sheldon, it was his first job. Zeiss suggested that maybe his message wasn't getting across to a talented team that had beliefs about who they should be. And then Craig Berube comes in, and all of a sudden they're signed up and they're on board. Look, Todd McClellan, I think, is in that group where he has a little bit of gravitas.
Yeah.
And maybe the message sinks in now. So maybe there is that new coach bump, and then there's a continuing bump after that because the messenger is viewed differently.
Maybe, but the Red Wings they're not a young team, Sean, right? I mean, they're not at all a young team, and they've also brought in different pieces along the way. Like, yes, Raymond and Sider are younger, talented, you know, star-type players. You know, DeBrincat's underperforming this year. I would tell you that Patrick Kane is, you know, Comfort, Kopp. Tarasenko's underperforming in this year. But we're talking about guys that are probably on the other side of it at this point, right? I mean, not that they're bad players by any stretch, but they're not in the front nine of their careers. DeBrincat's the closest still to the front nine, but not in the front nine of their careers. Can Todd McClellan bring more out of them? At this point in their career, don't you think they should be able to bring more out of themselves?
Well, I think that Steve Yzerman brought those players in because he thought that the Detroit Red Wings were ready to win and they were ready to be a playoff team and they needed those veterans. They couldn't go out anymore with the rebuild and just get beat up. They needed veteran players to get them over the hump. They haven't done that. Do they do that under Todd McClellan? Maybe.
Maybe. Here's a bigger question, Sean. Does this put Steve Yzerman on the clock?
Yeah, I think this was his last
this was
hole
his bullet,
card.
Right?
This was the one card he had left to play.
They haven't gotten lucky in the draft lottery, right? They had those couple of years where they didn't get lucky in the draft lottery when they thought they would, so they weren't able to get the generational, if you will, right, player. But they've, I mean, listen, Raymond and Sider have developed very nicely. The other guys, you know, not so much at this point, but there's still some coming. There's still some to play. You know, a guy like Marco Casper, you know, Jonathan Berggren, you know, Edvinson. Plus, we touched on, you know, the goaltending. You know, they have Trey Augustine. They have a stable of goaltenders on the rise. But the Red Wings have not made the playoffs in quite a while here. What is it going on? 9 seasons, 8 seasons now, something like that. And Yzerman took over to put this team back into that contender status on a consistent basis. He went from Jeff Blashill to Derek Lalonde, now Derek Lalonde to Todd McClellan. To me, this puts Steve Yzerman on the clock. Although this is the issue when you hire a generational star for your team to be your general manager. How do you fire Steve Yzerman?
By his record.
I know, but if you're the Detroit Red Wings, I mean, but you get my point, right? I mean,
yeah,
the Detroit Red Wings firing Steve Yzerman, his number hangs in the rafters. He's a Stanley Cup champion multiple times. He's the captain, the leader, the one of the greatest of all time in this, you know, well, in the NHL, but certainly in Detroit. And now he's on the clock. It's the next conversation to have. The conversation right now is, can the Detroit Red Wings salvage this season and bump up and take a spot, slowly bump up and take that spot that Ottawa has right now? I don't see it, but the new coach bump is the new coach bump, and it is a real thing.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. Do they have enough? I think that's the big question, and they haven't shown it yet, so it'll be quite a bump if they're able to get over the top.
Yeah. All right, last thing. This breaking news took away a few things. We had to touch on this. The last thing, and let's make it quick here, Sean. New Year's resolution for the podcast. Just for the podcast. What is your New Year's? I hope it's a good one. I hope it's be nice to me. What's your New Year's resolution?
I have multiples. One is to be nicer to you. Because that's the spirit of the holidays, Dan. You sometimes it's too easy. And I need to
You're
restrain
failing at
myself.
It already, but all right.
No, I am. I'm telling you. Two is we need to get more wacky soccer names into the podcast.
You did that for sure.
Three, we need more listener participation.
Ooh,
We have loyal listeners all over the place. I hear from them by email or when I run into them in person. You hear from more because you're the more famous of the two. And
Your
I have more of a
resolution is gone already.
No, I'm being serious. Everywhere
you're
we go,
condescending
it's
condescending is what you're being.
It's Dan Rosen. Oh, Mr. Rosen. Oh, Mr. Rosen. I see you on the network. I listen to you on At the Rink. How about the time last year when we were in Seattle and the guy's like, oh, dude, I listen every week to At the Rink. And I was standing right next to you.
Yeah.
And the guy didn't even acknowledge
I remember
me.
That.
Yeah.
They didn't acknowledge you at all. Yeah.
So you're the more famous of us. So you hear from more of the readers, of the listeners. But I think we could have like a little listener participation thing going on. And I think that would be great for the podcast.
I think you're right. I think we should look into doing that for next week's podcast, which will be the first in 2025. I have one. I like yours, the last one, you know. So that I'm gonna,
not
I'm
the gonna, first one?
I don't believe that one. It's not.
I think you like me being mean.
It's good for the podcast. I take it well. I have one New Year's resolution for this podcast. I will not, in 2025, make fun of your Christmas salad. It won't happen. I won't make fun of it. I won't even bring it up. Phil can record this. Come Thanksgiving, I'll totally forget about my New Year's resolution, and I will make fun of it. But he can. But we can drop this into a podcast down the road. I will not make fun of your Christmas salad. Promise. Resolution. Book it.
I don't care. It just shows your unworldliness.
Okay. It's not 2025 yet, by the way, so I can still make fun of it. Anyway, this was fun. The last one we'll do in 2024. We had breaking news even, so this was a good one with Zai's coming on. And listen, we'll be at the Winter Classic next week. We'll be back from the Winter Classic. We'll be looking ahead to the Four Nations and playoff races and trade deadline and everything, Sean. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, happy New Year to the listeners. Be safe. Have fun. Enjoy your New Year's. Watch the Winter Classic and the World Juniors. And we'll catch up with you on the other side.
Absolutely. And remember, the podcast is brought to you by Skip. Skip to the good part and get groceries, meals, and essentials delivered right to your door on Skip. Enjoy the hockey.